Johnson, president of National Farmers Union. Thanks for letting us put our coat up here. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Welcome to D.C.
This is pretty nice.
Yeah,
thanks.
Look at the winter out here. Yeah. Huh? I mean,
how are you going to ride that bicycle back home in this? Huh?
Come on.
You're going to have to get the missus to come pick you up.
Yeah, right.
Mark, congratulations on your election to president of North Dakota Farmers Union. It's got to be an exciting time for you.
It is. Really exciting. Thanks, Joel.
So what are you doing up here on the Hill?
Well, we're out meeting with the EPA on the RFS. We're meeting with Agriculture Marketing Service on some of the railroad issues and some stuff dealing with NCBA. And then, of course, we're going to meet with Senator Heitkamp and Senator Hovind and talk about just a few minor issues and so forth. But we brought a group of young people with us to show them how it is to meet with some of these larger organizations in USDA or EPA and so forth.
I'm going to get a chance to get them on here in a little bit, some young producers, and we'll make sure that they can kind of explain this visit to D.C. and how this is going. Roger, you got a job to do, and so do you, Mark, now. I could not tell you every intricate detail of this farm bill. And Kevin Cramer, who just left the congressman, was talking about how, you know, he's already getting hit up by farmers to say, hey, hey, hey. And he's going, FSA is saying, give us some time and then we'll come out. Are you going to be part of that at Farmers Union to make sure people know and understand the current farm bill, Roger?
Of course, yeah. I mean, we put this information out to all the states and the state presidents. I mean, Mark will do this in North Dakota, but we pretty clearly, this is a pretty good bill. We got a lot of pieces of this bill that we really wanted. The price protection was a huge issue. So if the market collapses, we've got price protection, permanent disaster programs, livestock disaster programs, country of origin labeling, energy title to feed in with the RFS. We just got a lot of good pieces in this farm bill, despite the enormous dysfunction of this place.
That's a gross understatement.
You know, the House in particular is just a god awful process to, you know, dividing this bill, and it was really an attempt to kill it. It's been 3 years in the making, so it's good to have it done, passed into law, and I'll start working with USDA to get it implemented.
Debbie Stabenow, the senator and chairman of the Ag Committee in the Senate, was with us earlier today. And, Mark, she said that this really is a good bill she said it's a very diverse country. We don't raise peanuts up here, for example. That's what I heard. She didn't say peanuts, but that's what she meant. Peanuts and cotton aren't what we do. We raise corn and soybeans and sugar beets and, you know, wheat and barley. But she said this is a really good bill for the northern part of this country. Is that your read on it as well?
Oh yeah, we did. We did real well, as Roger said, that we got a really good bill out of this Congress, and we should be quite pleased. We're working right now on a couple, 2-3 meetings in mid-March. We have NDSU doing some research for us, and of course we'll bring out congressional staff and maybe Aaron Crowder and do some education. But it'll be a little hard to get all the details done real quick. Farmers probably won't really sign up fully for this thing till late July, August. But
okay.
We should have enough detail that we can get them down the path of, you know, working on spreadsheets and so forth so they can calculate what's in the best interest of their farm.
Where that's frustrating to me, Roger, is, and I'm going to get political again for all you folks, go ahead and get mad at me, but we could have had this farm bill done the middle of last year. Farmers could have spent their winter when it's a good time to be doing their homework on this instead of the busiest time of year for them having to do that.
Yeah.
And that's frustrating, Roger.
Of course it is. This is probably the first time in history where the Senate went first on a farm bill. That's never done in this town. But it was specifically done twice the Senate went first. They passed a bill a year ago, two years ago, and passed another one last year that turned into this one. The House could never get their act together. And it's principally because that you got the Tea Party sort of wagging the tail of the big Republican dog over there, and it's just, you know, I can't imagine the difficulty that Speaker Boehner has in working with that caucus, because it's just a very, very difficult political dynamic. They couldn't even get to the point where they could bring a bill up. I mean, they can get it through the Ag Committee. The Ag Committee operates on a real good bipartisan basis, but they couldn't get the Speaker to bring the bill up. 2 years ago now, and then finally last summer when he did bring it up, you know, you had all these poison pill amendments that were basically all offered
designed
by
to kill the
Tea Party.
Yeah.
Designed to kill the bill, and in fact, they did kill the bill.
Yeah.
So then they brought it back in pieces. And it was, it was a very, very difficult process. And there's no reason for that to have happened. I mean, that's not the way our government ought to.
When you first became ag commissioner in the state of North Dakota, Roger, what was the price roughly for a bushel of corn?
Yes. I'm sure it was under $2.
Right. I mean, I knew you were going to say under $2.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm
think
sure
about
under
that.
$2.
I mean,
and actually, it wasn't that long ago where it was still under $2. People forget this.
Right.
But even in the early 2000s, it
right.
was.
It
well
leads to what I'm getting at, though, with you, Mark, about how, you know, corn has become such a king and such a big player. You know, you're always out there at North Dakota Farmers Union looking out for ag producers long term, not just today's market, but long term, whether that be through insurance, whether it be through many other ways. But when you look at some of the aggressive nature, because farmers are no different than anybody else. Joel Heitkamp gets a couple bucks in his pocket. He starts thinking about buying a new Harley Davidson. I get that. But, you know, are we going too fast on some of this? I see some of the land. I mean, are you nervous?
Well, I'm somewhat nervous with the land prices because they tend to go a little bit further than they should at the time. But the reality is I'm seeing younger people come back. I'm seeing fathers asking their sons to participate. The technology that we really need to adopt to stay competitive is happening. Precision agriculture is coming on. So I think we're just really good at what we do. And, well, there's certain things that aren't always perfect, you know, with land prices going real high and not being affordable for young people. That's a little challenge, but I don't think we could do it any other way. We have to have this new technology. We have to have very smart people on the land, and we have to be a lot more precise in how we apply our products. So it's a good thing.
We've been in your offices here, Roger, talking about oil and the role it's playing in North Dakota nationally, how North Dakota is on the scale. You now no longer are Mr. Farming in North Dakota. You see people on a national scale. What do you hear from people when you go to other states and they know your background of being from North Dakota?
Well, they all know that North Dakota's got the lowest unemployment rate in the country. They all know that it's doing very, very well financially. The fiscal house is very strong shape, and they all know it's because of oil. I mean, everybody knows that all around the country. It's, you know, when I was on the Industrial Commission, I think North Dakota was maybe 6th or 7th in the nation. In terms of oil production as a state,
yeah.
It's now number 2, and it blew past number 3 by probably 50%. I mean, it's only behind Texas, a fair ways behind Texas, but still, that's very, very, very rapid. You know, I think North Dakota's got a lot of challenges with oil because of this rapid
Well, I think North Dakota, and I'm not convinced that Mac and Kenton and these guys, John Warner, who called for a special session, aren't right.
Yeah.
I think that waiting until 2015 to deal with some of these issues is ridiculous to ask of the public. You know, those oil-producing counties, they deserve the opportunity to be heard well before that. Let's take some calls. John, you're on with Mark Watney and Roger Johnson. Go ahead.
Yeah, I got to ask you about this latest headline. These boys on the east side of the state intentionally destroyed their potato crop, so they stole up to $1 million from the taxpayers. And I'm sure Johnson remembers, probably knew the guy that stole over $10 million when he...
You're talking about what happened in Minnesota,
nope,
right?
Nope, right here in the state.
And then, okay.
And then the big farmers union honcho stole $10 million, you know, back in the 90s. How do you get that money back? You got to get something in the farm bill that they can take their land. So that's repaid to the taxpayers.
Okay. Appreciate your call, John. I don't remember any farmers union honcho stealing $10 million, guys. Refresh my memory.
I'm not aware of that. They'd have to tell me who it was.
Yeah,
I'm not familiar with that.
Okay.
I don't know it either. But what I will say is if anybody, farmers union or anybody else, is stealing money, they ought to be held accountable.
Right. There's a process for that.
Of course.
There's a process for that.
Of course.
Guys, I'm going to let you go because I want to get these young producers on.